Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. Whoa, hello. Pretty much. My name is Jeffrey Wright. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can always listen on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can even stream us on the iHeartRadio app, as well as the TuneIn Radio app. The producer of the program is George Ruggiero. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. Glad to have you back here. How'd everything go last night? Can tell you were... having to use your voice a little bit more last night than usual, I suppose.
Yeah, it was mainly we had an open-air press box.
Whoa.
And, you know, when your boy has to deal with anything below 60 degrees, it gets tough. And so it was tough. It was also tough for the Owls. The 2025 campaign has come to an end. But good luck to all the other teams tonight that will be out in playoff action. My company is now each and every Friday. He, of course, is the Memphis Grizzlies beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. You can also hear him as he hosts the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Episodes available each and every weekday wherever you get your podcast. Follow him on X at DeMichael C. DeMichael Cole, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. Happy Friday, man.
Happy Friday to all. So let's tell everybody what we got coming up on in the program. We'll start, of course, by discussing what do we think we'll be talking about on Monday. Of course, we got three pretty significant opportunities for the big local teams. Of course, the Grizzlies will be first up tonight, 7 p.m. We're not on a special. We're not Bally's anymore. We're now FanDuel Sports.
Yep.
FanDuel Sports Southeast. So 7 p.m. start for that. Then after North Carolina and KU, we will have the Tigers hosting Tulane. Is that line still dropping? I saw it down to 3 at times.
I also saw it as low as 3. I'm not sure if it's flipped yet.
I know there was significant movement because I'm now getting my friends that are like doing gambling shows asking me what's up.
Yeah.
What's up? Or is it just that guy for Tulane looking like he's actually going to play that linebacker?
So I don't know if it's that. The only other things that can come to mind are Brendan Lewis,
yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I feel like the way that this has played out, I'm at least expecting him to start. But who knows?
Right.
Maybe y'all will get the Pete Thamel Twitter notification.
Free Jeffrey, man.
But yeah, I mean,
let's get him back.
Guys, y'all realize X doesn't have there's not a human being you can talk to?
No, they fired all of them.
Yeah.
There's not one. Like,
yeah, they fired all of them.
Yeah.
It's like I have submitted the same request. Like, it's like every 36 hours, I just submit the same request.
Every 36 hours?
Yeah, because then I submitted it yesterday, yeah. And if I went in right now and tried to do it, it'd be like, you're already in queue. It's like, well, I've been in queue now for 3 weeks. So now we're at the point where it's like, do I just do the new account?
I know you don't want to do that.
It's not even like an ego thing. It's more of like, well, what happens if I find out in like a month I get the other one back? Like,
oh yeah.
That's called an alt. Just have your alt.
Now you got it.
Maybe make that my burner.
Yeah, that's your
burner. Exactly. Yeah.
But you got to change everything though. You can't have people recognize you. You got to change the profile. You got to act like that page got hacked. Like, now my backup's hacked.
Well,
then you go back to your page.
Let's not rule out that page could get hacked, too.
That's very true.
We need to get you some 2-3-factor authentication.
It is the classic.
We've been over that.
Like, I am such a product of the internet. I've always prided myself on I don't normally get duped. But I got duped this time.
It happens.
And it's like, it's no, it's just like a, you're old. Like, it's over. Like, just, you're done. Like, you just go ahead and, you know, call it a life. Sayonara. Like, just start wearing dad jeans and go get the shoes from Costco. Mm. Like, you know, for the record, the Costco Prima cotton shirts, very comfy. Just saying.
This is your wash social media moment?
This might indeed be it. So we'll start with the big games this weekend. Of course, the Tigers will get our first look. Have we ever confirmed? I think the Tigers are going to be the last team to play their first college basketball game.
Are they really going to be the last
team? Because I think there were some teams that hadn't played yet that play tonight.
Yeah.
But if they are not the last, they are close to the last.
Let me check tomorrow, because I could have sworn we also saw, didn't we see there were some like West Coast teams that technically start like later on in the night or something like that?
Let's
check Saturday.
So with, I wish I could just, like, that's the other thing. It's like, you can't like sort at KenPom just by like, who has not played?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who is still 0-0?
Okay, here we go. You got Princeton, Akron.
All right.
Kennesaw State. All these teams play.
Those are all in the morning, though. Those are all 11 a.m.
Yeah, they play a little bit earlier. The Tigers are 2 o'clock. Those games are 11.
Oh, some of these are rough. Like, you've got Penn State, New Kensington. You've got Spring Hill.
Wait, does New Kensington count?
Okay, Austin Peay, the Govs play.
Okay, the Govs, there you go.
Okay, that's a real one.
They haven't played yet. Their first game will be against Air Force at 3 o'clock.
So no, they've played.
Austin Peay?
Has it counted?
Oh, I don't think it counted.
Yeah. It says
that's what I'm wondering. Does that New Kensington, that cannot be a Division I school.
Got double O. UC Santa Barbara plays at 3. So there's a few.
All right.
A couple.
So they're like one of the last five. Is that what we're thinking?
High Point. Yeah. High Point plays at 4.
High Point. Somehow I wound up betting on them a lot.
High Point, have you seen? They got a nice. They got a nice.
They do have a great setup.
Yeah.
Also, the president of that school was like a banking exec,
okay,
and like he wants them to learn how to like go to business dinners. So they have a Fleming Steakhouse on campus that like you can use
on
once
campus?
A month. That you can use your meal plan for once a month to like learn how to like sit down and operate at like a business dinner. Yeah. I think it's only about 70 grand to go there, though.
Yeah, that's it.
Of course, I can't talk. I think my school, like, if my daughter wants to go to Pepperdine, it's like, hope you make a 1600 on the SAT, sweetie, because daddy can't afford that one. Yeah. It's like, it's insane. It's now like, I think it's like 75. Like, I remember the Pepper Pals group chat.
The Pepper Pals.
Yeah. That's the gay name we gave ourselves, the lame name we gave ourselves. let's see. Pepperdine tuition. It was like someone pointed it out that had older kids. It's only 71 right now. There you go. Yeah, 71. Yeah, there you go. Room and board.
Mm.
Yep. Josephine, you will not be going to Pepperdine. Just letting you know that. All right, let's get into Blake Topmeyer is going to join us later on in the hour. We're going to talk about Blake has a column up over at USA Today about perhaps should Josh Heupel get out before they get him and get to Penn State.
Oh, wow.
And it's an interesting angle because...
Let me go over to...
Well, his premise is he's not in trouble now, but his premise was James Franklin wasn't in trouble last year either. Brian Kelly wasn't in trouble last year either.
Right.
And they still don't really have a solution at quarterback for next year, right?
No.
Because is the kid from Greensboro that's a stud.
Yeah.
He'd be a true freshman, is that right?
True freshman, mm-hmm.
Has Heupel ever started a true freshman? Because Nico redshirted, right?
Yeah, he was a redshirt.
And didn't Nico come in? Didn't Nico also come in the spring?
Nico did come in.
So, like, he had been there basically, like, 18 months, right?
Yep. That's all right. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, is McIntyre still there? Didn't they get one of the, like...
Yeah.
Was it McIntyre that they got? They got one of the kids from the...
He played a little bit earlier this season.
The schools that beat MUS.
Yeah. That beat MUS?
Yeah, I think he was at Brentwood.
Oh, okay.
I think he was at Brentwood Academy. So, I always think of, like, it's like that, and then the running back at Baylor this year, look out for him. He's a junior.
Yeah.
That guy. It's like, even when they go up against, like, McCauley, who also has a bunch of studs, it still looks like... The closest thing I would say is, have y'all ever taken a look at Derrick Henry's high school film?
Oh, it is.
So I don't know how many people know this. Derrick played like 1A football.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can see it.
And
oh yeah,
it's guys fighting for their lives on that field out there.
And it is bullying.
He was in Florida.
Correct. I think it was Pensacola.
Yeah,
I think it was like
he's in Florida. So you would expect him to play some real dudes.
Yeah, I mean like. Emmitt Smith's from Pensacola. It's like, yeah. I figured they went to the same school. It's like, nope. Yeah. It might have been 2A. But nonetheless, when you see his high school highlight tape, you are like, those are not the same species.
Unfair.
Yeah. So it turns out maybe the guy that didn't look like the same species in the NFL, if you could imagine him in high school, it's even more so. It checks out. So Blake will join us. Then we'll talk about that. We'll also get his thoughts on the rankings. We'll get into the list during the next hour. I think we have to explore this very important question. Does Bo Nix stink? Like, I think we have to talk about that.
Answer.
We also got a Brian Kelly statement yesterday, which actually fell in line with, did y'all see the story that LSU people were trying to use against Kelly, where he apparently solicited a image consultant from like a DC,
just like the
a DC, like, political firm, you know, that would help candidates.
This is what you do to like kind of lessen the buyout or something. Like,
no, it was preemptively done by him to combat his lack of popularity.
Okay. I see.
And so there were a lot of people that were like, "This is weird." I'm like, I think if y'all were aware, he is not the only person that's ever done that. Mm. Like, there are a lot of image consultants now. Oftentimes what it gets done by is your agency will do it. Like CAA will send you through the workshop. Now it appears, I think Trace, his agent's not CAA. It's Trace, Armstrong. The guy that was the Urban's guy. Yeah. And
But he represents some players now.
Oh yeah. No, apparently he put the Bears together. Because I think Ryan Poles, basically there was always the arguments that I guess Poles is a client of Trace's.
Yeah.
And that Poles was leaning on Trace to put together a free agent class.
The power of the agents in 2025.
It's quite the world.
Yep.
Yikes. Quite the world. We'll get into that. Also, we'll see if we get a YouTube TV update. Doesn't sound like we will be. So if you're out there with YouTube TV, I'd suggest going and buying the digital antenna. If you want to watch the ABC games, you can watch the ABC. Yeah,
good old phone a friend.
Or you can phone a friend, or you can, I think, what are the options? So I think people tried Fubo last week.
Uh-huh.
Because how long does Fubo have trial period? I think some people just like bit the bullet and tried to ESPN Unlimited. So I guess everybody was kind of like on the fence, whatnot. But again, big win for us that stuck with DirecTV.
Yep.
Just saying, you all calling us boomers. How am I looking right now?
Sitting pretty.
How am I looking?
Feet kicked up.
There we go. We will get into our games of the weekend as well. We'll tell your story. But I think let's start with the Grizzlies. Are we good there? All right, let's start with the Grizzlies.
Start there.
All right, so obviously you have to cover the team on a daily basis, so I don't want to put you in a bad spot. So this is kind of what we've been discussing, and I want to pick your brain on this.
Okay.
Is it as bad as it feels? Or is it a couple of things that have compounded? Number one, the injuries were something that were unavoidable. Even before we saw Ty Jerome get hurt and Scotty get hurt, you looked at the schedule and you're like, all right, well, the first five are manageable, but there's this stretch that we're in right now, and you're like, oh, boy. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then you add the Ty and the Scotty. Ty's injury, Scotty's injury.
Yep.
And... I mean, when did we find out about Brandon? I feel like we found out
about Brandon literally right around the time, right before they opened up camp and all that, like right before that. So September 26th was the day the update came out on him.
So we first found out about Zach.
Yep.
Then BC. basically right before camp because Ty and Scotty's injuries were both
They both participated in
right. Mm-hmm. And then Vince, was Vince part of that one update?
Vince missed like the first three or four games.
Yeah, so. Vince was part of that update that came out during camp.
No, did he get hurt in camp?
He got hurt in preseason. Because it was like, we're holding him out for a game. He has some soreness that he's getting through, and then it just turned into him missing three or four games.
Yep. Okay, but the four I think that most people would focus on are...
Definitely the four, yeah.
Edie, Clark, Ty Jerome, and Scotty.
100%.
I still have all my Vince stock, and listen, it's not trading at an all-time high. I still think you're going in the right direction,
though.
It's at least going up. Yeah. It's at least going up right now. So... the thing that we've been talking about is how much of this is the vibes are bad versus they are just shooting the basketball so poorly that it's making everything look even worse.
Yeah, it's a combination, but I think it started off with the bad vibes and it becomes bigger. It becomes a bigger struggle because now you're losing games and you're losing games. So we know there was the whole situation with John Morant, East Lobe, locker room stuff, et cetera, the Lakers game, the way all that played out. All of that happens. And then after that, you haven't won since. Like, that game literally started this four-game losing streak. And it's to the point now, it's like, yeah, they want to put that behind them and that whole thing, but you can't because you keep losing. And you keep losing and, like, we see John Morant, he said it himself, he doesn't have his joy. Right now, I would argue that he's not the only player on the Grizzlies who is lacking joy, so to speak, at this time. And the other part of it is it's just not fun basketball right now, like getting to your point. Like it was two games ago, Ja's driving to the basket and Santi Aldama's in the corner. Santi cuts towards the basket, basically coming in the same direction as Ja. And Ja, of course, he doesn't see him, so he's flinging the ball to the corner, expecting Santi to be standing there in the corner. The ball bounces off Santi's hand, goes out of bounds. It's a turnover. And Ja Morant looks right at Isolo. And I don't know if you saw Kelly Eco's story from Yahoo. He talked about, like, the strange interaction between Isolo and Morant throughout the game. But that's something that I talked about going back to that game because this was one of the few times that he talked to Isolo during the Piston games. And he looked over there and he was like, we don't have spacing.
Yeah.
And he said it after this most recent game, like, we don't have spacing right now. And he's taking accountability for it, but because he's not shooting the ball well either. It's Ja, it's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, it's Jalen Wells. All these guys are shooting below 30% from three-point range. You're not going to have spacing when that is the case. And that's part of why Jaren is struggling. That's part of why Ja, everyone's talking about, his – rim frequency is down. It's nowhere to go when you get there.
Well, that's what, because this is kind of what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
When they're missing as many shots as they are.
Yeah, it just makes it easy to guard you.
Well, and then it's just, at no point do you force anyone, because Eric's whole thing is, if you listen to the radio broadcast, he's like, you'll probably hear me say 3-2 shell a lot.
Yeah.
And everybody's just doing the same thing where, they're putting the three perimeters up front, and even when the ball screen comes, two guys collapse, and Ja's got nowhere to go. And because they're not hitting enough shots, they're not forcing anyone to play really to get out of that.
Yeah.
And so the other aspect that we were talking about is with them missing as many shots as they are, it also compounds on the defensive end because we knew this wasn't going to be a great rebounding team to begin with.
Right.
And then furthermore, they're missing a bunch of shots, and you're allowing the teams to basically get you one and done, and then they're on the move.
Yeah.
And so then your defense is, more times than not, your offense is setting up against defenses that are basically back in position.
Yep.
But you're never really able to get into position on defense.
Thing. Yeah, they dictate what they want to happen.
Right.
Because there's no, we got to keep Ja Morant out of the paint much because it's like, it's really the only thing that we got to guard against, at this point.
Well, and that's kind of the other thing. It's because we've said all week, I think Ja probably does have some legitimate complaints.
Oh, I don't think he's had one, to my knowledge, that isn't legitimate.
Now, I also think he should be a better leader.
Yeah, the way you handled him is a completely different thing. Everything that I've heard that he's complained about is 100% fair to me. The substitution patterns, the lack of spacing, we see all of it. Yeah.
I would say most of his complaints are basic. Yeah. I think the only complaint that he might not have that fans are having is like, he should be shooting better.
Yeah.
Like, that's the other thing is because I was thinking about it in these terms. Let's just say he were shooting 30% from three.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now, is he 38 from the floor? I think he's like 38.
For total, he probably is around.
I think he's around 38% from the floor, and I think he's 14% from three.
He's at 28% over the last three games.
Like, okay.
Total. Like, that's the unhappy stretch. But so, yeah, 38% for the season, yep.
And let's just say his career average from the floor is what, 46?
Yeah, 46.7.
Yep. Okay. So let's just say, though, he were shooting 28% from three and 45% from the field, which is still below both career marks.
Yeah.
But if you start to think about that, like, do they maybe beat the Lakers? Like, I mean, in the end,
they don't beat the Lakers regardless because
it was
he
one
comes
of those
out
weird,
in the second half and says,
well, that's true. But, okay, but how about this, though?
Uh-huh.
I guess this is the other question that I have. Do we think the original dust-up happened at half?
Halftime.
Okay, because that's what we're getting confused on is because the reports kept coming out and they're like, it was post-game, and I was like,
No. This was during the game, 100%.
I was like, 100%. That had to be at the half. And mm-hmm. so we all just kind of like, well, I guess we'll, like, until someone can say it. So that now, that is like, there's no other explanation for how he looked in the second half.
Yeah, it was
Do we think, though, if he hits a couple of, like, let's say in that first half, did he go 0-for against the Lakers?
No, he scored all his points pretty much in the first half. I think he finished with 8 points, and all eight were in the first half. I think Jaren only scored a couple in the second half. Like, yeah.
Okay, but, like, I was thinking about in the terms of, like, what if he hits two more threes in the first half?
Okay. I think Islo's problem was more energy and effort than
– And I was wondering, though if
– But to your point –
What if they go to the half? Because what did they hit it
up?
They
were up 14.
They were up 14 at the half?
They were 14 at the half.
So probably the same thing happens, right?
Yeah, it's,
like, is there really that much difference? They're up 20 than if they're up 14?
Yeah.
Because if he's calling him out.
Islo has said from the jump he is very much more about the process than the results. So even if you're up 20 and he feels like you're out there just going through the motions, I think he'll still say something.
I'm trying to think. So Miami was there's no shots they could have made that would have made that game different.
No, Miami was just on fire.
On them,
correct. Like that game was
Miami just torched.
Yeah.
I mean, what, they gave up nearly 80 in the first half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so, okay, let's throw that one out.
They did give up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the losses now are like, what if, okay, let's say against the Pistons, because what, didn't Ja go like 1 of 7 from the three?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
But let's say he goes 3 of 8. Is this like a different thing? Like, because I'm trying to figure out how much of it is.
It's tough to say because I think they're past the point of where just job playing better is going to fix this thing.
I want to be clear. I'm not saying this is entirely.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think of. I actually am thinking of it more from a psychological perspective.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
My thing with Ja is he sulks. When he's not hitting shots, he sulks.
That's why I asked him about his joy.
Yeah.
It wasn't the way he was playing on the floor. It was just a general basketball
question. You weren't trying to bait him?
Oh, wow. Look at that. Breaking news on 92.9. Wasn't trying to bait Ja Morant when I asked him about his joy, even though I've asked him about it in multiple occasions beforehand. But, you know.
So, real quick, and just like when it comes to this, and this is also from, you know, being at plenty of these games, catching as much of this as possible.
Yeah.
How much of this could end up just being a slump, even where if there is a bit more of the regression to the mean for a lot of these players, because like you guys said, it's not just Ja. KCP is shooting exceptionally poorly. Jalen Wells
worst slump of his life.
Well,
awful.
Well, didn't he have one? I thought he had one. Like,
I mean, there was one in the middle.
Second half
wasn't
of
like
last
a
season.
February, like a,
yeah, second half of last season, he definitely went down. But it was never this bad.
I mean, we have to ask the question.
Wells' mid-range, too, has been...
Did he put on too much weight?
Oh, that's. But the first two games,
I never got buffed because I was worried about my shot.
the first two games of the season, I mean, he shot okay.
Changes where your elbows are at.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't. You don't have the freedom of movement.
That's the LeBron James thing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But like, and why I bring that up and why I ask that is because even within the flow of the game, it's not like all of these missed shots is a function of the offense not working, because a lot of these are good shots. Like, they're the right shot to take. They're just missing them.
I think some point, you got to listen to your players too.
Right. No, 100%.
And if my players are telling me that it's tough for me to get in the rhythm this way, I'm going to adjust some things a little bit.
Absolutely.
But
I'm not trying to, you know, buck one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how much of it is a mix of a cold stretch.
Yeah.
If they, like, go back to not even right at their own average, but at least closer to it, how much of this looks different because the shots are falling?
I think it does, but it's like so many guys being this cold at one time. That's got to be a little bit on coaching to me. It's no way Jalen Wells, Kentavious Caldwell Pope, John Morant.
Or it's contagious.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, because going back to your point just about the cycle of the whole thing, like, if you see your star player, who is usually, to me, when Ja's happy, Ja has the most infectious personality around there. He's the guy jumping around. He's the loudest. Jaren is that way, too. So when they are not the loudest guys and don't have – everybody notices. It's hard to ignore because you've seen Ja Morant talk, you know, talk his trash and – yell things, clap his hands after a big play. You don't see any of that right now. I mean, he threw the alley-oop to I forget who it was.
Was that to Bassey?
Yeah. He just got back on defense. Everybody else was like, and I was like, next play. Like, that's not the usual.
So I'm looking at closest defender, the shot dashboard in NBA.
Okay.
So if we go wide open, they are – on wide open threes, they are averaging 8 of 21, which is 36%. So it's bottom 10, but it's not like there are – Boston is worse, Detroit is worse, Pelicans are worse, Thunder are worse, Magic are worse, Pacers are worse, Nuggets are worse, Blazers are worse, Mavericks are worse.
Some of those are unexpected to be there.
So
Pelicans,
but it's not like, I guess, like, I don't know. So I think the other problem is I understand the logic of when you're shorthanded, you want to go as few minutes as possible without at least Ja or Jaren on the floor.
Yep.
I understand the logic. I guess I would have to say, like, are we
you just played them more.
Like, now it's like, it feels like now
you gotta adjust to your roster.
Well, it also just feels like to me when you're shorthanded, like, hey man, this is kind of like when you, like, you can lean on your depth when your actual depth pieces come back.
Thank you.
Because I guess just where I've always struggled with the idea of strength in numbers.
Me too.
I'm fine with strength in numbers if I've got 10 good players. But I have been to my core, always opposed to, I need to play worse players more minutes for the sake of, and like, I do acknowledge that, yes, the game is getting, the pace is increased, and, but it's like, this is the stretch when you're going to be shorthanded, so you need to lean on the better guys more.
I'm just so big on adaptability. Like, stubbornness bothers me.
Well,
like,
but
I don't care if you're running an air raid offense.
Yeah.
If you lose your top three wide receivers and your running back is decent.
Well, let's get some slots in there.
Like, you don't know, I'm still going to throw it 70 times and bring my walk-on receivers in there. Like,
no,
I understand the system and what it's, you know, what you're prioritizing, but you need to the goal. Every coach, the number one goal should be, I need to maximize my roster. I want to maximize the chances of winning. You're not maximizing the chances of winning if you're saying Vince Williams, go play 16 minutes of point guard, and Cam Spencer, go play 16 minutes of point guard. Ja, you play 32 minutes.
I need to interrupt. I owe Desmond an apology.
Oh.
I think I found something that I might like worse than Des playing point guard.
Which one is it?
As a stockholder of Vince Williams Enterprises,
uh-huh.
I do not love when Vince is the primary ball handler.
Put him off the ball.
I thought you were going to say when Cam was on ball because that was...
I don't like either one because they're both so much better off the ball.
Correct.
Which brings me back to the original point. You can't play Ja 32 minutes right now. You can't. He wants to play a little bit more. Listen to him. Adapt a little bit. Okay, Ja.
I guess
36 minutes. We might not get you at full 100%, you know, the playing with your hair on fire for all 36 minutes. But every other superstar in the league does that. And that's the difference. I think Islo is more, you know, like adjusting to the times. Whereas we've seen over the course of the history of the NBA game, when guys play 40 minutes, yeah, they'll take a couple defensive possessions off from time to time to, you know, maximize their energy. What's wrong with that? You need them on the floor.
Well, what doesn't make sense to me is he does seem to be adaptable throughout the game.
Yeah, I agree.
But, like, that's kind of where I struggle, which is, okay, it seems to be very rigid about the starts, but it's not like he's so married to it. Like, I hate always just doing the Taylor comparisons because, like, it's not one and the same, but it's like one thing that I have liked about Tuomas is I feel like during the course of a game, he coaches the game to win.
Yeah.
But it does feel like the starts are we're going with this plan.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but we're now at a point where the game plan has not worked for like 8 games. Because mm-hmm. I think to me, the thing that is kind of depressing when you watch them is like the script when they lose is the exact same. They fall behind by 10 to 15.
Very early.
And then basically the guy, whoever they're playing, just kind of keeps them at bay the rest of the way.
Yep.
Like maybe there's a game where, you know, a team pulls ahead more, but it's like it always just feels like it sits like right in that range.
Yeah. It's a puzzling thing. And I pointed it out, you know, before the last game, people were not too fond of that quote.
Which one?
I think you saw it, George. I posted it on X. It was
not to brag.
Was this no?
That's why I said.
Was this the like short, middle, long term quote?
Yes, that
from
quote.
Islo.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Where basically I asked him, and Islo's very big on net rating, so I was very careful with how I phrased this question because I said, "Look, 5 of your top 6 lineups in net rating, because I know you love net rating. 5 of your top 6 lineups have Cedric Howard in them. Is he going to join the starting lineup?" And he basically said, I think
this is the answer where he's like, well,
he doesn't optimize for.
But like, mm-hmm. Cedric is actually playing like minutes.
Yeah, he's
like,
playing 28, 29 minutes.
I mean, honestly, my thought to that was it's like, it feels like this is kind of. Remember last year when we were going into the season, like, should Marcus Smart start?
Yeah.
But we're like, well, he's going to wind up starting. Like, it almost just feels like this is kind of the KCP thing where it's like, the veteran's going to start, but it's almost like, well, can we try it the other way?
Yeah.
Like, what if KCP's making shots off the bench?
He's a pro, man. It's all good. You're trying to win games. Like, at the end of the day, no one's going to be happy with all of this losing. And you're going to be.
Well, like, that's the thing about tonight. It's like, listen, I get it. It's the NBA. Who knows, like, what happens? Some team come out shoot 45% from 3.
This is a must win to me.
But it's like, if you do not win this one, we counted it up. You're staring at a 10-game losing streak.
You got to win this one. Let's just put it at that. You don't got Anthony Davis tonight. Well, he's doubtful. But
I was going to say, have we gotten an update?
He's still doubtful.
Okay.
He's because trending towards playing in their next
Well, the funny
game.
Thing was during in-between shows,
I
believe Cowherd had a Mavs beat writer on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like if you just – everything we've talked about the Grizzlies this week, they're going through the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like – nobody's happy.
High expectations, and now you have the worst record in the West. The loser of this game will have the worst record in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
it's just not good vibes for the Southwest boys right now.
Southwest boys, it is not Love Field.
Unless you're Houston. Houston's on a win streak. San Antonio's solid. But the other Southwest boys, Pelicans and these two, mm-mm.
Yeah, a lot of time to figure it out. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Blake Topmeyer joins us. Let's talk about his column about Josh Heupel and his suggestion that he should go to Penn State. Let's talk about that and more when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Blake Topmeyer is the
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
He's senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered. New episodes available each and every week wherever you find your podcast. Follow him on the Everything app at @BTopMeyer. Blake, why are you trying to get Tennessee's coach out of there?
Well, it would be the perfect time, wouldn't it? Yeah, it appears I kicked the beehive.
I'll say this. I'll defend you. I do think the crux of your argument, which was, yeah, Josh is fine right now. James Franklin was fine at the end of last year. Brian Kelly was fine at the end of last year.
Absolutely. James Franklin was fine as of, 6 weeks ago? I mean
James Franklin
together now.
James, listen, I've always thought like sliding doors, and maybe we'll find out that Oregon's not that good, but like, I don't know. We'll see how the season plays out. But it's like, what if that ball that Dante Moore, when he mishandled the zone read, what if that ball just bounces to Penn State and they win in overtime?
Right. No, absolutely. But yeah, as with Josh, like, if you wait till the posse, as I put in my column, closes in on you, then it's too late. Then your resume doesn't look good enough to where you can hop to another. You're getting fired, right? Like, if you wait until the 4, 5, or 6 temperature that I think Josh is probably feeling right now, with some angst and some apprehension accelerating among the Tennessee fan base in year 5. No, it's a small minority who want him fired, but I think it's fair to say angst and apprehension are accelerating. His approval ratings aren't what they were in 2022, but from the outside looking in, he's still got a really good resume. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, only one program, we talk about this all the time, only one program can hire Lane Kiffin, and that's if he leaves at all. And the other thing is, I'm tired of this argument of like, Penn State has to hire a better coach than James Franklin, or what was it all for? Let's face it, Penn State's not getting a better resume, probably, than James Franklin, because, I mean, who would that be, right? It's someone with a national – James Franklin was just in the college football playoff semifinals last year.
Did Mike Elko have a better resume than Jimbo Fisher?
Exactly. And so that's the thing. When you're hiring, you're not necessarily looking to hire someone with a better resume than the guy you just fired, because that's really incredibly difficult to do, because those types of guys aren't leaving. The types of guys that I think become really strong hires are the ones that, like in Josh Heupel's case, he had that peak season in 2022. He goes to the playoffs last year, but now he could be available because he's 9-3 or 8-4 or God forbid 7-5, wherever the season ends, where it makes him available because he's not bogged down by the playoff, but he still looks like he has sterling credentials, and he could be a revelation, I think, of offense for Penn State and quarterback play and inside the Big Ten. They're not used to facing that track meet style of offense that now I do think SEC defenses are much more accustomed to, with 3 teams in the league running that style of offense, and Josh Heupel, Lane Kiffin, and Jeff Lebby at Mississippi State. And who knows, does Alex Golish end up in this league? And then 25% of the conference is running that offense. To take that show on the road to the Big Ten, where you'd have an easier path to the playoff, I think, than what you'd have year over year at Tennessee. And both those programs expect you to be in the playoff every year. So at some point you wonder if coaches are going to ask themselves, if both schools want me to be in the playoff every year, which one do I have a better shot of being there every year or in most years? Now, Josh might be perfectly happy in Tennessee and says, I'm going to stay here until they tell me I can stay here no longer, or I win a national championship and they build me a statue.
Maybe now the idea is, okay, yeah, you have to deal with maybe the quote-unquote humiliation, but it's like, yeah, you're going to fire me. You're going to pay me whatever that buyout is. Like, that's, like, in the end, like, you're going to fire me.
And I do think there are a lot of guys in that situation. The downside to that with Josh is he's still a young coach. You know, if you're
sure.
If you're Brian Kelly at the end of your career, or Brian Kelly might say he's not at the end, but what is Brian Kelly?
I mean, 64, I believe.
Okay, so yeah, at that point, it's like, you want to pay me $54 million in failure money to get rid of me? Okay, whatever, that's fine, fork over the check. But for Josh Heupel, you know, do you want to take it to the point of maybe getting fired, or do you want to restart your clock because you're still a young coach, right? I think for someone in his situation, it is much better off, you know, if things were to pick up in temperature at Tennessee, it would be much better off for him to stay one step ahead of the posse than to take his buyout check, lick his wounds, and jump back into it. I think for a coach of his age, sitting at his point in his career, if he thinks that's the road it's going to go down, maybe he doesn't. Maybe he thinks he's hoisting a trophy and his national champions next season. But if he thinks that's a road it could go down, I would argue he's in that category of, like, I don't think I'd want to be fired. Doesn't mean your career's over, but you do have to sit a little bit maybe in purgatory or step backward. Like, James Franklin may not have to sit in purgatory, but he's going to have to take a step backward in the quality of job he would get. Whereas, like, if he would have left Penn State a couple years ago, he probably could have left and landed at a spot about as good as Penn State and restarted his clock.
Well, I think that's an interesting question because, granted, I get it. He wasn't going to leave after they finished the semifinal, but it's like, do we really believe he's that different of a coach than he was January 1st? When did they lose to Notre Dame? That was like January 8th, right?
Right, yeah.
Is he really that much different of a coach 6 months later, 7, 8 months later? But it does feel like if he would have said in January, hey, I'm available, he would have more options than he has right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which is so, you know, like that it does also show like how fickle this entire business is, but like, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I think it's a relevant thing for Heupel.
And I'm wondering if, you know, when Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly left in 2021, it was such a shock to the system. Like, they did what? Even though they were leaving for great jobs, we just didn't see a lot of that in college football. Guys leaving the caliber of job of a Notre Dame or an Oklahoma, even if they were leaving for great jobs, it's like, why, you already have a great job. Why would you leave? I'm wondering, with the 12-team playoff to where nobody cares about bowl games anymore, they expect you to be in the playoffs every year, if we're going to start to see that with a little bit more frequency now, where it's not as much of a shock to the system of someone leaving a great job for another great job, for whatever reason that is, maybe to restart the clock, maybe they feel like they don't have a great situation, maybe coming back the following season, maybe they feel like some NIL momentum has cooled, whatever the reasons are. I'm wondering if maybe we don't, but I think it's possible we could start to see that a little bit more often, where it doesn't seem like as much of a shock to the system anymore. And I think we're already starting to see that. We're talking about Lane Kiffin, who's turned Ole Miss into a really good job. They could be 11-1 in the playoffs, and we're sitting here talking about, is he going to take another job? I mean, that's sort of, I think, kind of the paradigm we're heading in. And the converse to that is, if you feel like you're a home run at your school and the job looks a lot different now than it would have 5 years ago pre-NIL, you're Kurt Cignetti, and you say, I'm staying in Indiana because I'm a god here and I can win the national championship right where I'm at. So I just think there's going to be a lot of shifts, I think, in the way coaches approach the carousel that start to look different than what they did, you know, 5 years ago.
Well, this has been something I've been thinking about the last week or so. And maybe you tell me if you think I'm wrong. Doesn't it feel like it's really, really quiet on the carousel right now?
Totally. It has that 2021 feeling almost,
and,
doesn't it?
And like, so, like, that's the whole thing I'm thinking about. It's like, well, okay, I do understand the logistical reasons. Number one, we're in a 12-team playoff era, and there are more coaches that are still "quote unquote" in it. Okay, like, and I don't believe most of these guys are leaving playoff teams. Even though technically Brian Kelly, when he left, it was still possible that Notre Dame was a playoff team, but I think he kind of read the room of like, all right, we're not getting in front of Cincinnati. But I was also thinking about it in terms of what if maybe we are actually seeing some of these people kind of Like, what if this was a reset of the coaching market in the sense that you had a bunch of high profile jobs, they're going to have to pay out a ton of money, and now everybody's going to sit there and say, okay, is it really best for us to go spend $12, $13 million to get a coach that we don't really know 100% is going to make us better? And kind of like, I just keep wondering if maybe like you're going to start to see more people do what A&M did, which was, hey, let's go find a good football coach. Let's build the system around him. And it's kind of why it's quiet. Like, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of things going through my mind where it's like, it feels quiet. I know agents will still always be working behind the scenes, but it's like, if any of these people were really already on the move, these things would leak.
Yeah, you raise an interesting one with A&M because it is, though, such a vibes profession, because these guys, they don't look at this like shareholders or the board.
100%.
A better way of putting it, you know, the board of a company would look at it. The people making the hires, it's all vibes. I think Elko worked because he was a known commodity at Texas A&M, and the fan base knew him, and they knew that the absolute best part of the Jimbo Fisher experience was when Mike Elko was there running the defense, right? And so you could sell that. I think, like, it is difficult, even though, you know, if this were a company and your board said, no, instead of throwing $14 million a year at this guy that we don't know if he's a slam dunk, let's go get this other guy who might be a bit of a shot in the dark, but shows some promise, and we can give him a shorter term contract with a smaller buyout, and we try it out for a few years, and if not, we flush him and try the same with the next guy. But you know, there is no board looking at it from that sense. It's these ADs that are looking to make a splash, looking to change the vibes, because they know if they don't, they're the next one out the door.
I think the other aspect, if we use our business analogy, they're not spending their company's money.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They're spending somebody else's money.
Yeah. I say this all the time. It's really easy to spend somebody else's money. Much harder to spend your own money. That's the difference between college football and the NFL. Really easy to spend somebody else's money. And the other thing is, like, you know, speaking of this analogy, you're an NFL owner. As long as you own the team, You can make many hires as you want. One doesn't work, you flush it, you try again with a different strategy, or you keep hitting that same strategy until it works. If you're an AD, you might get two bites at this apple, maybe. You know, some will only get one. If you're Scott Strickland, somehow you're getting a third bite of the apple. But for anybody not named Scott Strickland, you're usually getting one, maybe two bites at the apple. So it's like, you know, do I want to do the fiscally responsible thing, or maybe the thing that I would do if this were a company run by a board, and I don't know that there's a slam dunk? I'm going to take the rising coach who's a little bit of a flyer, and shorter contract, smaller buyout, whatever. But no, if you only got one or two shots at this thing, you're spending money like a drunk at 2 a.m. on the Vegas Strip, because you think, if this doesn't work, they're going to sack me next. So why not? YOLO. Let's go big or go home.
No, it's because it was interesting, because I was reading when you and John went through Like It or Love It for Auburn.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was interesting. He was out on Dillingham. You know, does John forget that Kenny was the OC there?
Well, you know, John, when you start a sentence, does John forget?
Fair.
I love John, but it's possible the answer to that question is yes. but no, John is he would admit this, so I have no problem saying this. John would admit he's a little bit influenced by native Southerners. He likes, so it's like, yeah, Kenny Dillingham swooped in and was the OC there for 1 year. But John looks at Dillingham, Dilly Dilly, as he's that guy from out in the desert, right? And the last time Auburn looked west, they got Brian Harsin. Now is Kenny Dillingham Brian Harsin? No, he's a 180, an absolute 180 from Brian Harsin.
I think Kenny might have had his, like, I think last week he did something more impressive than the run that they went on last year. Did you see what he did with Jeff Sims last week?
Yeah. No, and I think it seems like he's not going anywhere. But I think, and I want to tug on this a little further, because I think you're getting at something here, too. Like,
probably not, but continue.
Probably not. Maybe give me too much credit.
Yeah.
But no, like, John Sumrall right? He seems like he's the heir apparent at all these SEC jobs if Lane says no to him. And I don't think John Sumrall's a bad coach. I think he could go to the SEC and be a slam dunk. But why is there so much buzz around John Sumrall is what I want to know. And maybe he just has the right person in the ears.
No, you know what?
Media types. But it's because he's a Southerner.
Bingo.
He looks the part. He talks the part. He's from Alabama. And so it's like, but I think that's what we're getting at here. Some of it is just like, it's vibes, right? It all comes back to vibes. Is John Sumrall more accomplished than Silverfield at Memphis? No, he's not. He's not. And Silverfield, I mean, he's from Jacksonville, Florida. So it's not like he's a Yank, but he just doesn't feel as Southern as John Sumrall does, the Alabama native who played linebacker in the SEC.
More importantly, with Ryan didn't do the SEC coaching
tour.
Yeah.
Sumrall did the tour of the South, and those are stupid. Maybe not stupid. Those are overblown reasons to get enamored with someone. Is John Sumrall might end up being a slam dunk for somebody. But do I feel more strongly in John Sumrall than I do in Ryan Silverfield or in Alex Golish at South Florida? No, not necessarily. I don't. For all we know, John Sumrall could be the next Sunbelt Billy. I mean, that guy was born and bred in the South, did the SEC tour, was crushing it at a Group of Five, which is not UL Lafayette. I mean, that's not a job where you can just walk in and know you're going to crush it. And then Sunbelt Billy came to the big time and he flamed out spectacularly. Perhaps John Sumrall is a 180 of that, but what it comes back to is like, it's all vibes, isn't it? And Sumrall has the vibes of an SEC guy.
Well, I guess this is what also I find so fascinating. If you set aside Kirby, the two people in the modern era that are the most successful, and granted it's a stint, but it's literally Urban Meyer. The only two, there are three coaches that have had multiple titles in if we go back honestly since expansion, which is 92. It's Urban and it's Nick. Neither of which I believe had ever coached a single second at the SEC.
No, except when Nick got to Alabama, he had the SEC.
But like when, but I'm saying,
but when he went to LSU, you're right. Yeah, he didn't, and so he got title number two when he's Alabama. But I wanted to detract from your point because I see what you're saying. Yeah, those guys were not raised on grits. They were not raised on crawfish boils. That was not them, right? They were not cut from the cloth of the South, and they come in and they're the best. Well, Nick Saban might be the greatest of all time. Urban Meyer is number two behind him in the last 30 years of SEC football as the best to ever do it. And so, but then the alternative to that is Brian Kelly, right? Like that was the narrative on him all along. Yeah. Was he doesn't.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.